Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In the fifth meditation, in addition to providing an ontological argument for the existence of God, one of the other things that Rene Descartes is going to do, and that's connected to this, is talk about what he calls true and immutable natures. These are the essences of things, and they exist in our minds in some way, and they could also, in a certain sense, exist outside of our minds as the essences of the things themselves, if those things actually exist. And remember, at this point in the meditations, he hasn't gotten us to the juncture where we can effectively reintroduce the entire world. So if we think about what the goal of the meditations as a whole is, and the goal of this meditation 5, it's to not just engage in hyperbolic doubt, it's to extricate himself, Descartes, from all the doubts that he has been in. He introduced doubt and deepened it, brought it to what he thinks to be its ultimate conclusion. But he did that so that he could reestablish a solid foundation for knowledge and indeed even for science. So he wants to see ultimately if he can know anything about material things, anything about substances that we call extended substances. That's going to happen later in Meditation 6, but he's setting up the groundwork for that right now. So he tells us that he can imagine, and it's important that he uses that term imagine there. He says, I distinctly imagine that quantity that philosophers vulgarly or commonly call continuous quantity. What does this mean? He says that it can be understood as extension or length, greatness and depth, right? So we're talking about the three dimensions of things. And he says, which are in this quantity, or rather in the chose to which we attribute it. So, you know, when we take this book, for example, it has length and width and depth. It exists in space. Now I've actually done something else with it. I've moved it around. I've changed what he's calling its situation or place. We can also take physical things, and again, let's use this book as an example. Each of these pages that composes the book is a part of the book. So he says, I can number in something many diverse parts and attribute to each of these parts all sorts of magnitudes, grandeur, figures, structures, situations, and movements. And finally, I can assign to each of these movements all sorts of times. So what do we have going on here? We can effectively mathematize, we can, you know, use quantity to understand physical, material, extended objects. And then he says, not only can I do this in general, but I know not only these things with distinction when I consider them in general, but also, as little as I apply my attention, I conceive of an infinity of particularities touching upon numbers, figures, movements, and other similar things whose truth appears with so much evidence and accords or harmonizes so well with my nature that once I begin to discover them, to literally uncover them, découvrir, right? It doesn't appear to me that I learn anything new, but rather that I am reminded of what I knew earlier or before. That is to say that I perceive things which were already in my mind as soon as I have turned my thought towards them. So what is Descartes talking about there? This is what we often call innate ideas, ideas that we are born with. And so, interestingly, Descartes is saying, not only do we have these general understandings of things in an outside world that we hope exists, but within the scope of my thought, if I direct my attention properly, I can find an infinity of particularities that have to do with all of these mathematical properties. And we don't learn these. We actually remind ourselves of them. We bring them out of the storehouse or treasury, the thesaurus in Latin, of consciousness or of memory or whatever it is that they're stored in. And we shine the natural light upon them and we say, aha, now I understand what they are. And now notice what else he says about these. This is very important and very interesting. These aren't pure nothings. Now, why would he say they are nothing? Well, because if they were nothing, then we couldn't actually conceive of them. They do have some sort of reality. They have the reality that earlier in Meditation 3, he distinguished as objective reality. The reality that they have is ideas, not necessarily formal reality existing out there in the world quite yet. They might not exist outside of my thought. Some of these, he's willing to say, probably don't exist outside of my thought because you can never truly find them perfectly in the natural world. But he says, they're not just made up by me, even though it's in my power to think about them or not think about them. And then here is where he says, they have their true and immutable natures. Nature vraie et immuable. So they're true natures, right? They display themselves with clarity and distinction, with evidence, as he said. Immuable, immovable, or immutable is a way we could translate it. Another way that may be a little bit more relatable is to say unchangeable. They have natures that cannot be altered. So this is very important. They're within our thought, and we can think about them or not think about them, but when we do think about them, we're stuck with them as they are. We can try to think that a triangle has four sides. That's not going to work. We can try to imagine a circle that is squashed on one side. It's no longer a circle. We can try to imagine properties such as a circle being able to be collapsed into some other sort of thing and you know, changing the relationship between the radius and the circumference, not going to work. These sorts of things, you could say, resist our volitional attempts to redefine them because they have these true and immutable natures, which all of us would be able to access. They're within all of our minds. Descartes here is only considering his own thought, but presumably, all of us would have exactly the same panoply of these ideas, which have their true and immutable natures. Those are their essences. That is the essence of the thing. And he gives you two examples, and perhaps what we might consider to be a third example. So let's consider each of these in turn. Triangles. There may be no triangles actually existing in the real, you know, what we call the natural world, the world of extension, the world in which you're viewing this video right now through the eyeballs in your body, or maybe you're listening to it with the ears, right? There could be possibly no perfect triangle that exists. But as soon as we think about a triangle and we consider its nature, we realize that it has to have angles adding up to 180 degrees. Now, of course, somebody's probably going to bring up, what about non-Euclidean geometry? That's happening later. Descartes is not considering that. Even non-Euclidean geometry, if you extend it so that you can have triangles with less than 180 or more than 180, there's still rules governing it. There would still be true and immutable natures. They would just be true and immutable natures that have additional properties, right? You can think of it this way for squares or pentagons or whatever it is that you want, right? That's why we can have equations in mathematics describing what the angles have to add up to. So, nothing says that you actually have to think about a triangle, but once you do, you're going down that triangle road and you are going to discover those properties. He also brings up God, and this is where he comes up with the ontological argument in Meditation 5. And I'm not going to go over the whole of that because I've talked about it elsewhere. But here's the general idea. When you actually consider the idea of God as a perfect being, that is a being lacking no perfections, you realize that existence for this being and for this being alone is one of those perfections that it cannot lack, which means that from the idea of God, you can conclude to the reality of an actually existing God. Can't do that with anything else. Can't do that with triangles. Can't do that with mountains and valleys, as he's going to point out. But you can, according to Descartes, do that with God. That would be, and he brings up this notion of true and immutable natures, by carrying out that line of reasoning that is an ontological argument, you discover, to the degree a human being is capable, the true and immutable nature of God. He also brings up a third thing that could be considered an example. In this case, it's not so much about quantity, although we could say a quantity of one, right? It's more like an off-on switch. Something has a property of having something else correlated to it, so it's a relational property. He talks about, and this is in the course of his ontological argument, a mountain cannot exist without having next to it a valley. And if you think this through, you might say, well, maybe it actually has several valleys, right? Who is to say, you know, how wide a valley is or something like that? But a mountain, if it does exist on some sort of, you know, plain, it has to have a valley. It has to have something below that corresponds to it. You could say a valley has to have a mountain as well, I guess. But there's nothing to say that you have to have any mountains at all. And you could well imagine a world that's perfectly flat, that has no mountains and no valleys. But once you do imagine a mountain, you do have to also imagine a valley going along with it. I guess you could say that that's part of the true and immutable nature of mountains. You know, that's mountainhood or mountain essence. Descartes doesn't say that, but I think it's a potential third example of what he's talking about here. And I do want to say, he only provides a few examples, but you could extend this technically to anything that satisfies these criteria. They're not pure nothings. They are existing in our consciousness, waiting to be brought to light. They might not exist out of our thought, but they would still have true and immutable natures. And he's going to use this in order to eventually get himself the whole material world back in the scope of our knowledge.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.